Very good. What would you normally be doing at this time when you were come to school? You doing math? English?
Morning roll call.
Morning roll call. Very good. So what do you like best about this school? Nothing. Nothing. Are the teachers nice and kind? Very good. Do you get lots of homework?
Yes.
But all schools have homework. Thank you. You can put it down here. Very good. How are you? Very good. Nice to see you. Do you know what job I used to do before I became a monk? Have a guess. Not an engineer, no? Yes. I was a school teacher in high school. But in those days it was very difficult. It was one of the reasons I became a monk. Oh, too many headaches with school children. What subject do you think I taught? English? No. Yes. Maths and physics. Yeah. I was science teacher. Yeah. And you know what I did when I was at university? I did study physics. What type of physics do you know? No, it was theoretical physics. It was the same department as Professor Stephen Hawking. You know the fellow in the wheelchair?
Yeah.
So I'd have seen him many times. We went to the same lecturer. And one of my best friends, it was one of Stephen Hawking's close students. So there was a recent movie about Stephen Hawking. I think it's called The Theory of Everything. And my friend, it was Bernard, he was featured in the movie as one of the friends. And Bernard, he is also a Buddhist, very strong Buddhist and close friend of mine. He was a professor of theoretical physics at Queen Mary College in London. So, if you go to a Buddhist school, you may very well end up as a top physicist, because we encourage people to develop their brains and their minds to a very high level. Do any of you like physics?
Yes.
You do? Where do you want to study? Cambridge?
I'm not sure yet.
Cambridge? I know a few people who can maybe get you in. What type of physics do you like? Okay. You want to go to CERN?
Sure.
Excellent. I know a few people, a few Buddhists in CERN. One usually comes every year to my monastery. CERN is the European Union's basically a particle collider where they discovered the Higgs boson. So this is top science. But you have to be very smart to get in there. But that's one of the things I was talking with your principal, they teach you here, I hope, to be able to argue with your teachers. Do you argue with your teachers?
No.
Why not? Do you think your teachers are always correct?
No.
Good. I told your principal on the way here, an old saying, where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. Which is why... Yeah? No, thank you very much. Now I already have my own upholstery. I mean, you're very thin, so you need cushions. Me, I don't need cushions. So, I'm chatting, might as well, while I'm waiting. So how does Buddhists believe in the origin of this universe? Do you know? Because even Professor Stephen Hawking, he thought it would start with a Big Bang when he first began his research. A huge cataclysmic explosion of matter from nothing. And that was the Big Bang theory. They even made a TV series about it, but it's got nothing to do with that physics. But later on, Professor Hawking discovered what is now called Hawking radiation. That a black hole is not the end. The black hole leaks, so it has a time after it. And in just the same way, the Big Bang is not the beginning. There's always something before it. So even Professor Hawking now understands the Big Bang is not what started the universe. The universe was there before the Big Bang. So, you all know enough science, I hope. I'm just chatting, if that's okay. Science, I love science. It was before many, 300, 400, 500 years ago, people in the world, they thought the world was flat. Remember that in history? And they thought if you travel far enough in a boat, then you would fall off the edge. You've heard about that? People believed that. But was that true? No. Why? Because the earth is round. It's curved. And even though the earth has got only limited area, it still has got no beginnings and no ends to it. It doesn't have an edge. Now, space, the universe, does that have an end to it? Has that got a place if you go at warp speed 10? Any Star Trekkies here? Very good. If you go fast enough, will you come to the edge of the universe? A barrier? We all know the universe has only got a limited volume. There's only a limited amount of space. But it has no edges to it. No beginnings, no ends. How can that be? Because space too is curved. Just like planet Earth. Space is not flat. You go far enough and you come back to where you began. Right back here. It's curved in another dimension. That is physics. Space with no edges, no beginnings, no ends. So that's why all scientists know now that the space is not flat. Earth is not flat. Now we go to the most interesting level. Time. People still believe in flat time, like flat earth. If you go back far enough, you'll fall off the edge, the beginning. If you go forward long enough, you come to the end of time, another edge. But that is called people who believe in flat time. And they're wrong. even time is curved. No beginnings, no ends. Curved time, not flat time. So, was there a beginning of this universe? Will there be an end? Is there a beginning of planet Earth or an end to it? Of course not. It's curved. And that's even Stephen Hawking's, what he says now. A universe, space, time, without any boundary. Timeless. Just like the Buddha said in the suttas. No beginning, no end. Not flat, but curved. Da da da. I love that sort of stuff. Because that's what everyone thinks the same, no one thinks at all. It's great to challenge stuff. So, do you have to do your year 12 exams here? At the end? That's what they call it in New South Wales. HSC. High School Certificate. Okay. Is that going to guarantee you success in life? So why are you doing it? You say because we have to. One thing it does show, that you develop determination. Not just determination, but in the application. Even the results aren't going to really determine your success or failure in life. But what it is doing is showing that you can really put forth effort. You can really try hard, and it pushes you to learn more than you would otherwise. But it's encourage you to do that. But you know how to? Do you do have to do exams at HSC? Do you know how to pass exams? Real easy. Now, I did very well in all my exams. I just got scholarships from a very poor family to a school with many migrants in London. Scholarship to a really good school, and a scholarship from there to Cambridge. Scholarships all the way, because there's no way I could afford going to a university like that. And the only way I knew how to do that was learning how to train my mind. Number one, I learned how to be totally silent when the teacher was giving a lecture. My mind went so still, which meant I could hear and remember everything. I could hear and remember everything the teacher said. Just like a sponge. If the sponge is dry, I can hear it out there. I can hear my echo. Hello out there. I figured out you're listening to me somewhere else.
My apologies there, because I was meant to tell you that you are being broadcasted all around the school.
Very good. Hello all around the school. Hi. when I did examinations, I learned. No, first of all, my mind was very still when I was listening to the teacher or when I was reading the book. I made my mind so peaceful, which meant I only had to read the page once and it sunk in. Just like a sponge which is dry, that can absorb all the water. But if the sponge is damp or wet, it can't soak up much. So my brain was so empty when I listened that I could remember almost everything. And that's how I could have very good recall. So when it came to the examination, I didn't need to try. I could just remember very clearly. That is one of the things which mindfulness teaches you, how to be still and soak things in. There was Sri Lankan girl was in Melbourne. She told me that she had learned her meditation when she was in Sri Lanka as a young girl. And when she went to Monash University in Melbourne, to medical school, she hardly ever went to a lecture. She hardly ever attended a tutorial. But when it came to the exams, she always came out top. She was a top student at medical school and hardly did any work at all. Top grades with less work. Are you interested? And how she managed that was that when she read the book, the textbook, she would read it with such a peaceful mind that she only needed to read it once and she could remember it. And when it came to the examination, she was so relaxed that the first answer which came into her mind, she wrote down, and it was always the correct one. So first of all, learning means you have a brain like a dry sponge. You can absorb more. If you're thinking of something else, it doesn't absorb much at all. But when it comes to the examination time, that is the time for you to relax. When I was at Cambridge, the final exams, they were called final because that's all your degree counted on, just one series of exams. And it was a 3-hour exam in the morning, 1 hour for lunch, and another 3 hours in the afternoon. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday too. 6 days in a row. That was very tough. But I had a means, a method which no other student had. I never had lunch. Instead, I went to my room and sat down and rested my mind, meditation. When I first sat down, I started thinking of my morning exam. How did I do? The morning exam was finished. It couldn't be changed. Right or wrong, it was too late. And why should I waste my energy on something where I could not make any difference? So, I could let go of all the worry about the morning exam. And the next thing which came into my mind was the afternoon exam. I was worried. Should I pick up the book and do some more revision? But if you haven't found this out already, whatever you look up half an hour before the exam never ever comes up in the paper. You always waste your time. So don't do that. So I didn't worry about the afternoon exam because I realized what I needed to do well in the afternoon exam was to prepare my brain now. I needed to rest it, not to worry. So I let go of the past, let go of the future. And when I came into the present moment, I found I was shaking, I was nervous. And what shocked me was I never knew that before because I wasn't watching. And when I was nervous, I could just relax until my body could relax. And the last thing I noticed in half an hour between final exams was how tired was my brain. I'd just done 3 hours of astrophysics of the galaxy, or 3 hours of quantum mechanics questions. That was tough. My poor brain was exhausted. But as soon as you know that, you can relax it. And when you relax your brain, you don't think or worry. All your mental energy comes up and up and up. And after half an hour meditation, I was so clear, so bright, so energized, that I always did well in the afternoon exams. Much better than my friends. Not because I knew more, because I prepared my brain for the 3 hours of exams. I taught that a couple of years ago to the Jewish school in Perth. And a couple of months later, I got a letter from the principal. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm, because they got the best score in the whole state. And they said, because of Ajahn Brahm, because of the Buddhists, we helped the Jewish. But anyway, yeah, but the point was, it works. So we can get you up, up, up. There's lots of skills which we know about education. You're training your brain. And so to train your brain, just like anywhere else, if you're training in sport, if you're playing NRL, if you're playing netball, tennis, soccer, cricket, whatever you play, you always have to go to the gym to exercise the muscles in your body, to get fit. Just like in education, you got to make your brain fit. Give it some strength and energy. And that's where all these cultivations of mindfulness and meditation really come up. They make your brain supercharged. That's why people do very well. But also in education, how many of you are scientists here? You only got one there. Like chemistry, biology? What about history? English? What? Speaking? How many of you are afraid to put your hand up? There's an old saying, if you ask a question, you may feel a fool for a few minutes. If you don't ask a question, you are a fool for the rest of your life. So it's always good to actually ask questions and challenge. That's what education is. It's not just listening, it's thinking and challenging. So every question is always a good question. That's why I should encourage you. So, if you have difficulty with your children, do they ask questions at the teachers?
Very, sometimes.
Yeah. Not enough?
I'm nodding your head now, so yeah. Ask questions.
Okay, this is a Buddhist story. If you want to know about asking questions, hello, please come in. Someone is giving me some nice drinks. You don't have to dress up like that to give drinks to a monk, but thank you anyway. Very good. Okay, but anyway, in one of the Buddhist suttas, the Chulakamavibhanga Sutta, there was a man came to ask the Buddha, why is it, the Buddhists believe in karma and rebirth, why is it that some people are rich and some people are poor? Even though you work really hard, still you can't really make much money and you can't retire young. While other people, they hardly work at all. And they become millionaires. Why? It's not because of how much work you do. It's also some cause from your previous life. And the Buddha said the reason why that people actually become rich in their next life. And it was such a good answer that they asked him another question. Hello, Kontai. No? Come here. Ah, socks are by. So, why is it, the next question, why is it that some people are beautiful while other people are ugly? And it doesn't matter how much money you spend in the spa or getting facelifts. Socks are by. Doesn't matter. But sometimes people are just born ugly or they're born attractive. Why? And the Buddha gave an answer to that. And the last question, which was the most important, why is it that some people are intelligent and other people are stupid? Why is it, no matter how many times you study and read the book, still you get low scores? While other children, they hardly do any work at all. They always come top of the class. Why? It's because of their karma from the previous life. And the Buddha said, the karmic cause for being intelligent in your next life, you know what it is? Asking questions in this life. So if you don't ask questions, you're going to be stupid. So that's why we always encourage asking questions. So also, what's the purpose of education? Is it to become rich? Do you want to become rich? Really, what would you become if you're rich? Too much headache. I once did a blessing for a woman who had a huge mansion next to the river over in Perth. It was such a big house that when I went there, I asked, I want to go toilet. They said, where's the toilet? She had to draw me a map of how to get there. These days, mansions in Australia, they always come with free GPS. So you don't get lost. They're huge. And I asked her, how many bedrooms in your mansion? It's about 13 or 14 bedrooms. Huge. And said, how many people are living here? And she said, only me. You know why? She was so rich. She was afraid of all her relatives coming to ask her for money. She was afraid of friends also coming to borrow something. So she was in prison because of her wealth. She even had security on the gate. Just like in a prison. That's what it looked like. So be careful, because many rich people live like prisoners. Check their houses. So, you don't need to be rich, just to be average is the best. That's why I say to Buddhist schools overseas and to Buddhist parents, if your child comes in the top 5% at school, or the bottom 5%, they're not good Buddhists. They're not. Because Buddhists, we believe in middle way. So if you're in the middle somewhere, you're the best. So what's most important in your life is that emotional happiness. To be happy with yourself and to be happy with whatever you're doing. When I was at school, I was always taught that to be happy you have to be rich and successful. And then psychologists taught me, no, if you're happy first, then you'll be successful. And now I know that both are wrong. Happiness is success. So if you're happy, well done. You're successful. How many people are happy here? Very good. Well done. You've made it, baby. You've made it. You've arrived. You're happy. So that's one of the most important things in education. Learning how to be happy students. And if you're happy, everything else will follow as a natural course. You don't have to be rich. But to be successful, many friends, many nice relationships, and happy with yourself. That's important. So, also making lots of good friends, because it's your friends is your best insurance. Do I have health insurance? I go overseas many times. I've been to Cambodia, I think 3 times now. And I have been to Thailand, Singapore, New York. I've been giving talks in Google headquarters and in Facebook headquarters. You know the address of Facebook? Not the email address, the postal address. Because I went there. Because they have their own campus, they built their own road, so they named the road. And the address of Facebook, the road they called Hacker Drive. And they're number one, Hacker Drive. That's the address of Facebook. Number one, Hacker Drive. So if you want to send a letter to them, number one, Hacker Drive, Mountain View, California. And the only difference between Google and Facebook, when I went to Google headquarters, was that there they give you free bicycle. Because it's a huge campus, it's like big university. To get from one place to another, you go in a bicycle. So they give you a bicycle, and you ride somewhere, and they leave the bicycle there, and you get some other bicycle, they're all shared. And in Facebook, they don't have bicycles. They have skateboards. So as soon as I went through security in Facebook, they gave me a skateboard. I said, no, I can't wait on a skateboard. I'd break it. Or fall off and injure myself. That's the difference over there. You know, there's so many Buddhists in Facebook and also in Google. That's why I went there. All the Buddhists were inviting me over there. So anyway, so much high achievers these days know how to think differently, to question, see things which no one else has seen. And I'll now teach you about innovation. This is an exercise in intelligence. What is this I'm holding up? What is it? Glass? Glass of water? Yes. What else? Tell me more. Yeah? What else? Come on. I want some words out of you. Holding it. What else do you see? What else? Clear. What else? What else? What else do you see? Yes. What else? What else? This is an exercise in innovation. Because you've already told me many things. Glass, I'm almost full, water. You didn't actually give me an idea of cylindrical, maybe about 4 inches high, maybe 3 inches or maybe 3.5 inches wide. You may say we can see it sparkly, because it reflects light. What else can you see? All of these things are things you've been taught, you've known before. When you run out of ideas, you run out of words, so you have no more words to describe this, then you can start to see it. The words stop you seeing new stuff. Glass, water is what you've been taught. For innovation, if you want to do experimental physics, you've got to see things which no one else has seen. You've got to go beyond what you've been taught. You don't dismiss what you've been taught, you go beyond it. To see what is really here, what this is. You've even got a little mark, Unilever, on the outside. This is how we do innovation. This is... A year and a half ago, I gave a keynote address at the 2015 World Computer Congress in South Korea. What does a Buddhist monk know about computers? Why was I invited to Google and also to Facebook, and to give the first address at the World Computer Congress. Because I know about innovation. How many of you know where the ice cream cone came from? You like ice cream cones? You know where it came from? In the... Yes? Oh, you know that story, yeah. You've heard me on YouTube. It was... St. Louis World's Fair. About 1920-something. And like any other fair entertainment, they had food stalls. And it just so happened the ice cream stall was right next to the waffle stall. Now you have waffles for breakfast. And because the two stalls were right next to each other, they talked to one another and they decided to collaborate. Two different food groups met together and they put the ice cream in the middle of a waffle. That was the ice cream cone. That's where it came from. Just two different types coming together, and that synergy was where we got the ice cream cone from. That's why for innovation, which is so important in your future careers, don't just do your subject. Have an interest in other subjects as well. And when those two come together, it's amazing how we can break new ground and do new things. That is so important. So, I haven't got much time here, but I'm happy to be here, and I think now is really the time, instead of me keeping on talking, for having some questions from you guys. And maybe not just the students, but also their parents as well. So now is the time for some questions.
Before you go on, just to let you know that there's about 200 other people around the school.
So
and, if they like to ask any question, can they?
Oh, please, yeah.
The questions, so
yeah, they can. I don't know how they can get them in here.
Oh, they can so, run in.
Okay, run in or just send a piece of paper in.
Yes.
That'd be amazing. That'd be wonderful. So it's amazing. Like, how many of you would like to become a monk or a nun? Instead of an experimental physicist. It's a very rewarding career. I get to go to so many interesting events. It was only a few years ago, the Melbourne Commonwealth Games. It was Commonwealth Games, yes. That I scored an invitation to Canberra to have a state dinner with Queen Elizabeth II. Wow. The trouble was, the invitation had a dress code. That was big trouble for Buddhist monk to go and meet Queen Elizabeth II when you had only three options. The first option was a black tie, they said. And I'm a monk, I've been a monk for almost 43 years now. I didn't know what black tie meant. Is that all you had to wear? Just a black tie, no shirt, no trousers, no shoes. But apparently black tie means a white shirt, a jacket, no, a suit, and I don't have a suit. So I looked at the second option. Have dinner at the Grand Hall of Parliament House in Canberra. The second option was military uniform. I'm a Buddhist monk, pacifist, you can't have military uniform. So that was the second problem. And the third part of the dress code, I looked at that and my eyes lit up. I can go as that. The third option was long dress. So that's as I went to Parliament House. I said, where's your dress code? Long dress, it fits. don't be so sexist and saying that men can't wear long dresses. So anyway, so you get to this really interesting stuff as a Buddhist monk. You can innovate, and you can actually, it's amazing how all the different areas where you can actually teach and make a difference, even in education. I've said this a few times, because you always don't always think the same. Challenge. Your HSC, is it just your personal score? Just what you do? Because in life, well, we don't really measure our own personal stuff. In real life, we have to not just compete with our friends, we also have to cooperate. So a lot of times, I was thinking to change some of the educational system, not at the school level, but the state level, so that when we do our exams, maybe 70% is your personal score, and 30% is averaged over the class in which you belong. So if there's a weak student in your class, you have to help them. If they don't do well, you don't do well. We are also rewarding not just personal ability, but also cooperation. And that would make people enter the workforce with much greater skills. I always thought it really sucked that you were competing with your best friend when you did exams. I hated that. You know, my best friend sitting next to me, he was getting stuck and I couldn't help him. In real life, we help each other when they're stuck. And that wasn't being rewarded or encouraged. So I always thought it would be wonderful if we could also reward cooperation just at the state level. So it's not just personal scores, but how we cooperate with one another. That is also really, really important. Anyway, we have some question here. Is Buddha a god or born like Jesus? Buddha was... What actually is a god? You know that sometimes I remember when Justin Bieber was famous, many young girls said, oh, Justin Bieber's a god. Or if ever you go and watch NRL, I don't know who's your favourite player, sometimes you think, oh, they are god. There was even the AFL, there was one of the players for Geelong, and his nickname was the Buddha. Because he was always really calm and peaceful. So is Buddha a god? It depends what you mean by a god. If you mean God is someone who's really wise and high, then maybe so. Or born like Jesus. Somebody asked me, and this is a good answer for you, in Buddhism, do we believe in God? And the answer is this. I was asked this question by a very prominent Australian, Father Frank Brennan. He was a person the Australian government asked to lead a committee to add a human rights addition to the Australian Constitution. This was a very, what we call, intellectual heavyweight. When he asked me that question, I answered it in this way. I had a friend who was a Catholic abbot, and he had always told me that one of his core beliefs was everybody, no matter what religion or no religion, everyone searches for God. And I respected what he said. And I asked, well, what do Buddhists search for? What do atheists search for? What do Jews search for? What are you searching for? You search for love, to be loved, and to give love. You're searching for peace, for respect, so people respect you and value you. You're searching for truth, especially in the school, for meaning. What are you searching for? And if everyone is searching for God, and that's what you're searching for, that must be what God is. Love, truth, peace, freedom, respect. Not a being, but a principle. So that was an answer which united people and took away barriers. So is Buddha a god or born like Jesus? A god is truth, is peace, is love, is something personal. Not something you worship outside, but something you recognize inside. And it should be something which unites, not divides people. So that is the answer which I gave Father Frank Brennan, and he really liked it. So it's a very difficult situation, being asked a tough question by one of the greatest minds in Australia and getting away with it. How to contemplate your mind when dying? What is the best way to face death? One of the great philosophers, I don't know if you know him, he's called Snoopy the dog in the Charlie Brown cartoons. Peanuts cartoons, sorry. No Peanuts cartoons?
Yes.
And Snoopy the dog. Charlie Brown said, you know, one day everyone must die. It's true, isn't it? But that's being so negative. Wisdom was Snoopy. Snoopy said, yeah, it's true, one day everyone must die. But most days we don't die. That's wisdom. So how to contemplate your mind when you are dying? Wait till you're dying. Live in the present moment. So if you know how to contemplate your mind when you are living, which is most days, then you'll know how to contemplate your mind when you're dying. How to better deal with grief and loss. My goodness. Grief and loss when somebody dies. First of all, have you ever known one of your friends die? No, maybe one of your school friends. They are not old yet. So how come young people die? And the answer is the simile of the falling leaves. Told by a monk I knew in the north of Thailand 40 years ago. And he said he was staying in a simple forest hut in the north of Thailand, in the jungles, just alone. And one evening there was a really fierce storm. The winds were strong, and they just got stronger. And first of all, small branches came off the trees. And then whole trees came down. Bang! Now this is for the teachers. Whenever you're giving a talk, always do that every now and again. And your students will actually wake up and pay attention. Teaching technique. Bang! Just missed his hut. He obviously survived, but he was scared. Now, if this was just thatch, grass, if a tree hit the hut, it would go straight through. If it didn't kill him, it would injure him, break his legs. And no mobile phones, no one would know he was injured. He'd probably die a slow, painful death, which was worse. So he was awake all night, hearing these trees thud down around him. In the early morning, got up. He was alive. He went outside to see the damage. Many trees had just missed his hut. He was so lucky. But what took his attention was the leaves, which were dead on the forest floor. Of those leaves, most of the leaves were old brown leaves. Leaves which had lived a long life on the tree. But amongst those brown leaves were many green leaves. Even some young, fresh green leaves were also lying dead on the ground. And he looked up at the tree, and of course most of the leaves still on the tree were green leaves. But there were still some old brown leaves still hanging on the tree, even though young green leaves lay dead. He realized that's the nature of storms in the forest. Check it out for yourself. The same as the storms which come through our communities. They mostly take the old people. But every now and again a few young green leaves get taken too. Nothing has gone wrong. It's just life. So that's how we can understand grief and loss. You see this glass of water again? Can you see the crack in the glass? It's microscopic. You cannot see it, but it's there. It's called impermanence. Because one day someone will drop this glass, the crack will open up, and it will shatter. It will die. Because it's fragile, impermanent, that's why I and everyone else would look after this, would care for it. If this was a plastic glass, we would need to care. We could kick it, throw it around, it would be unbreakable. Because it is fragile, that's why we care. Because your friends, your loved ones will die, they're cracked. That is why we care. That's the meaning of death. If we live forever, we would not learn how to care. Some more questions. I'll try and be quick. How do you empty your mind and control your thoughts? Very easily. You put your head to one side. Thank you. And that's how you empty your mind. You just train like anything else. It's so easy to stop thinking. I'll now demonstrate it for you. I want you all to pay attention, okay? Okay, one moment, yeah. I want you to pay attention, not just listen to me, but listen to what's going on in your head as I speak. Because as I am talking, you'll begin to notice some spaces between my words. In those spaces, what was going on in your head? You weren't thinking. You were being aware. There it was again, silent. That is how you empty your mind of thoughts.
Da da da.
How do you learn? Oh, how do you empty your mind? How do you stop worrying about everything? Everything I worried about never happened. What a stupid thing it was to worry. So even planning, I discovered that, you know how old I am first of all? No. Remember what I said, when everyone thinks the same, no one thinks at all. I am now 788. I am, that's true. I'm a Buddhist monk, I don't lie. I am 788, honest truth. How can that be? Because I do not count my age in years. I count it in months. Why not? I'm a free country. So I am 788 months since my birth. That's far more awesome than saying 65 in a bit. 788, yeah. So, my science guy, how old are you?
12 years old.
No, you're not. You're 144, at least. So now you can drive a car. You don't have to go to school anymore. You're over 144. You can actually retire and get a pension. So, don't always do things the same way. So that's why I say I'm 788. So, you don't stop worrying about anything, because I learned in all those 788 months since I was born. When I plan something, it still goes wrong. When I don't plan, it goes wrong. Either way, it always goes wrong. So I decide to not to plan. And then it's going to go wrong anyway, I know. So, but I have a happy time before it goes wrong. So what are you worried about? So for me, I said, it doesn't matter what happens in life. That's why I don't worry. That's also one of the reasons I put on weight. Because people say anxious people, you know, they actually get very thin. For 3 years, I tried to teach my friend, who is also my supervisor, to let go of keep on studying master extra course to make dollars. She said, how can I let go when I am so down under? I am so poor. Of course you're down under. You're in Australia. But being poor has nothing to do with how much your income is. Am I poor?
No.
I don't need to have hotels. I just stay in temples. Do I have any debts to pay off the bank? No. Do I have any problems with worrying about my health? No. I don't worry about anything. So I'm one of the richest people in Sydney without any money. What do you want money for anyway? My teacher, Ajahn Chah, made a prediction. He said, in the future, people will run out of paper to make banknotes. And they've done that now. They use plastics. Plastic comes from oil. Soon they'll run out of oil to make banknotes. Soon they'll run out of metal to make coins. So what will they use? And he predicted, in the future, people will use little pellets of chicken shit as money. Why not? What's the difference between metal, which is a stone from the ground, and little pellets of chicken shit? And you know what will happen? Many people will have their pockets full of chicken shit, and they'll go have banks with big vaults where they keep huge amounts of chicken shit. People in Sydney will be so proud of how much chicken shit they earn at work. I've got more chicken shit than you have. The IMF will become the International Manure Fund. And what's the difference? It's just the value. People go to the chickens and steal it in the middle of the night. And go to jail because of that if they get caught. What is the difference between chicken shit and money? It's just the value you give to it. That's all. So that's why...
Smell?
Banknotes. Have you ever been to India and some of the banknotes there, you can't touch them without sort of they've got so many diseases on it, to be honest. So yeah, money smells as well. It stinks. So that's what you actually, by the time you sort of graduate and go to work, it'll probably just be chicken shit and you'll ask your job, how much chicken shit do you get a month? So, tell her that story, and then she'll probably give up trying to sort of waste her life on chicken shit. Venerable, can you please comment on Buddhism and taking risks, e.g. career choice path, making choices? Why do people waste all their energy on making a choice? Because the decision doesn't really matter. It's what you do after you make the decision, that's what matters. So you become a chemist or an economist? What does it matter? It's just what you do after you've made the decision. If you decide to be a chemist, you're going to really put your energy and make choice a good chemist. If you become an economist, put your energy in there and make sure you're good at that. We waste so much energy before we make decisions, you've got no energy left after we make the decisions. You turn left or you turn right in life, not important. What is important is after you turn left, make sure it works. Don't look back and say, oh, I should have turned right. That's wasting your energy. Left turn, make it work. Right turn, make it work. That means you'll never be afraid of making decisions. It's what you do after you made the decision. That is the important part of life. So career choice doesn't really matter. You can become a monk or you can become a nun. Two options. It's what you do afterwards. How does having religion bring out the inner peace inside? How do you come about deciding to be a monk? It seemed like a good idea at the time. But like being a monk, as soon as I decided to be, I didn't have to be a monk. I had a good degree. In those days I was handsome. Lots of girlfriends. Now look at me. But the only reason I did that, and as soon as I became a monk, I was so happy. It was what I really wanted to do in life. So I never looked back since that time. So if that's who you are, that's who you should be. And you can ask your mum, when you were born, when you came out of your mother's womb, did you have any hair? Because if you were bald or had very little hair when you were born, that's an omen. That's a sign that you're destined to be a monk or a nun. And how does it bring out the inner peace? It's not just about inner peace, it's also about inner happiness as well. Happiness and peace go together. And you can always tell, no matter what religion, no matter what Buddhism, or no Buddhism at all, does it make you peaceful and happy? Is it going in the right direction? It causes right harmony. You feel happy with yourself, happy with others. If it does, then it's going in the right direction. There's all different types of religion. Some religion leads to people doing violent acts, which divides brothers and sisters. There's some religions which say, I'm better than you are, na 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 na. Those types of religions, avoid them. Religions which create peace and harmony and happiness and health, those are the religions to follow, no matter what they are. How should we handle daily stress? Stress when you're at school. Oh, come on. These are the happiest years of your life. What a myth that is. You know, there's many words I can't say. I don't know if you know any of the Pali words. Pali is a Buddhist language. And, you know, there's one word which, you know, everyone else says outside the school, but maybe it's against the school rules, you know, to say bullshit. So I try not to say that anymore. I use the Pali word, because the word in Pali for bull is go, G-O. And what comes out the back end of a bull is called maya. So I never use that word anymore, I say go mayang. So it's a lot of go mayang. So you have stress as a kid, that's go mayang. Go mayang, okay. That's a Buddhist word, you've learned something today anyway. So how do you handle daily stress? So easy. Stop worrying about stuff. That's the first one. Stop worrying about what happened in the past. Live in this moment and you can really enjoy what you are doing. This is the simile of stress. If you haven't seen this before, you must be living under a rock. How heavy is this glass of water? The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. If I keep holding this for 3 minutes, I'm a very dumb monk. What should I do when it starts to get too uncomfortable to hold? Exactly, yeah. Only put it down for 10 seconds, 20 seconds. You can try this, experimental physics. Try it for yourself. And then when you pick it up afterwards, it feels lighter. Exactly the same weight, but because you rested, it's easy to carry without stress. Stress comes because when you get tired, you don't know how to let go and rest. So, you said you do homework at this school. If you go home and you're doing that homework, and you get tired, turn off the computer, relax, and go back to it afterwards. You'll find you get the homework done much faster, with no stress. You all know that comes a time you're so tired, you can be looking at that computer screen and you produce nothing. Staring at it, words don't come up, answers don't come up, your creativity, if it's in English, you can't really create anything useful because your brain is tired. If you relax your brain, half an hour, listen to some music, whatever it is, go back afterwards. Your brain is now working properly, which means that now you can produce really good work with less effort and less time. It's not just pushing, it's efficiency in the use of the human brain. When you're tired, you relax. That is taught in Harvard Business School, come from me, and that is called an investment in time. You make time by learning how to relax. And one of the best ways of relaxing is your meditation. Many Buddhas were born only in India, and all prophets were born in the Middle East. Why can't prophets and Buddhas be born in Australia? We want Australian made. Why not? So, maybe the next one is coming in Australia. Maybe it could be you. Question, I've asked a young man to wash his hands and do proper work and earn a proper living. He said, no way, you don't know how hard I've worked in high school till now. If you're going to teach me to make as much money as you or your husband, then I might. Again, it's not about money. Even in psychology, it was proven. Many countries, if you earn too much money, you have too much stress. Too little money, too much stress. It's not earning more which will give you a happy life. It's just earning just the right amount. Too much money and you'll end up like Donald Trump. A pain in the butt. Too little money and you end up like homeless people on the streets of Sydney. Get just the right amount. Not too much, not too little. That is the best. And then you don't have to stress out. What's the point of working so hard, getting so much money, but you have no time at all? All that happens to you is you end up as the richest man in the cemetery. Is that a good idea? So, if you've got it, enjoy it. You know, one of the best ways of enjoying your money is sharing it with others. So if you do get some money, invite your friends out for dinner. Invite your best friends maybe to go see a football match or something. And you pay for it. You get so much more fun when you share your money than when you actually use it for yourself. That's been proven many times. Oh, this is another. How can I teach him the Dhamma of being rich, but honest? Oh, you're being honest. Oh, what's the point of being rich when you end up in jail? People do get caught, you know. There was one of the big prisons in West Australia. I used to go teach there. It was opened by the Minister of Corrections over in Western Australia, who soon became the Premier, who then went to stay in the jail which he built. He was an inmate there. So sometimes, what's the point of being rich when you end up in jail? So don't be a prisoner of wealth. The greatest wealth is your health and happiness. So teach him that. Eventually he finds out. How can I control my emotions and not allow them to take over my mind? They're taking over your mind, the emotions. They're controlling you, not you controlling them. It's only the negative emotions you should be afraid of. They are like burglars. Have you ever had your house burgled? You know other people have had people go into their houses and steal things. Those are called the bad emotions. Get into your brain and they steal your happiness. They take away your well-being. An example. A monastery where I live. 1 year ago, we had a burglary. A burglar came into our workshop and stole our generator, 2 chainsaws, and many, many tools. The burglar came in and stole all of that. The following morning, the committee was very upset and angry. That's bad karma. Stealing from a monastery. I said, Be careful. Burglar can steal the tools, but it won't steal our happiness. Our happiness is ours to protect. And anyway, the tools which that burglar stole was an old generator and old chainsaws. And with the insurance we got back from the burglary, we got new generators and much improved chainsaws. It was such a good deal. So that burglar, if I ever knew his name, I'd invite him to come back again. So, that is how not to let these things steal your happiness. Whoa, more stuff coming, okay. Very good. How can I understand my own self when there's so much happening inside of it? Exactly. You've got to simplify it first of all. Calm it down. Like the simile of the lake in the mountains. If ever you go into the mountains and you go and see a lake, if there are waves on the surface of the lake, can you ever see a true reflection of the moon and the stars in the heavens above? You will see distorted image. But when that lake is perfectly still, when there's not even a ripple on the surface of the lake becomes like a mirror. And you look over that lake, and you can see a perfect reflection of the moon and the stars. Only when your mind is still. Just like that. You see a perfect reflection of the truth. How can I be truly happy? Easy. Become a monk. You've got no worries. I don't have to worry about lunch. It's coming somewhere. Don't have to worry about where to stay at night. There's always people who want to put you up. It's easy, isn't it? You've got no worries at all. In the path towards Nibbana, do a Buddhist eventually become an un-Buddhist and become humane? Buddhists are humane. An un-Buddhist, I don't know how you can be an un-person. You become an un-boy. Because you've been to PAL school, after you've graduated, you become uneducated. I think what it really means is do you stop associating as a boy, a girl, a Buddhist, and just become a whatever? In a way, yes, because sometimes it's so easy for a person to say, I'm a senior Buddhist monk, look at me, and become proud. But it's very good every now and again to go incognito. So I was saying, because I was staying in a Vietnamese temple last night, I told them I was in Vietnam a few years ago at a conference. And I don't always sit on the big seat, sometimes I sit down the back somewhere. And I was sitting in the back of the conference hall, and a young monk came and sat next to me. And so we talked. He said, oh, where are you from? Said this Vietnamese monk. Spoke really good English. I said, oh, I'm from Australia. Oh, you're from Australia. Do you know a monk, it's quite famous, called Ajahn Brahm? And I looked at him and said, I am Ajahn Brahm. Ah! And that was so funny, I enjoyed that. So it's always best to go incognito. Why so many Buddhist teachers and traditions are stuck with too many rituals? Exactly. Sometimes it's too many rituals with no meaning. I gave a talk at a top Christian, probably the top Christian school. I always say go to the Jewish school. A top Christian school in Perth, Christ Church Grammar School. And the first time, I know the chaplain there really well, good friend of his, Frank Sheehan. And when I first went there, it was to give a talk at the morning assembly. And we had to wait outside until all boys school, really top boys school, till all of the children were assembled. And I was there with the principal. Has it gone over time? Probably. Okay. I was there with the principal and the chaplain and myself, the three of us. And the principal told me, this is a Christian school. So when we go in, the chaplain and I, because I'm a devout Christian, we will bow to the statue of Jesus as we go in. You're a Buddhist, so you don't need to bow. And I looked at him and said, I demand my right to bow to your Jesus. I was playing around, but I'm making a point. I said, what do you mean? You're a Buddhist. I said, well, I can see something in that statue which I admire and respect, and that's what I'm going to bow to. He said, just like when I bow to a Buddha statue, this is my personal practice. The first time I bow down to a Buddha statue, I bow down to what it represents, to virtue, goodness, trustworthiness, honesty. I bow down to virtue. So every time I bow down, I'm remembering the importance of being a good, trustworthy person. The second bow is to peace. Peace in my own mind, in my monastery, with my family, peace amongst all of you, peace in the world. It's so important to have some peace. So I bow down to that, I make it important every time I remember it with respect. The last thing I bow down to is compassion, kindness. Every time I see someone being kind, it's like the world brightens up. It's beautiful. So that's what I bow down to, three things. When I told that to the principal of the top Christian school, 2 weeks later, he came to a monastery where I live. We took him into the main hall in front of the big Buddha statue, a very devout Christian. We bowed three times together to the Buddha. Because I bowed to his Jesus, he bowed to my Buddha. When I explained what bowing is. So rituals, that's what rituals are there for. Have you ever seen, in some countries, they put incense on the shrine and they shake it before they put it in? Have you seen that? It's mostly Chinese tradition. I wonder, where does that come from? I've never ever seen that in Theravada Buddhist countries, shaking the Buddha. And then I realized why. It hit me, it's obvious. In Sri Lanka, in Cambodia, Thailand, many of those countries, when you're first taken to Buddhist temple by your grandmother, when you're a very young kid, she takes you to the temple and she shows you what to do. So because grandmother has got Parkinson's disease, she shakes it because she can't do anything else. And the little grandchildren say, oh, that's what we're supposed to do. So they do the same. So that's where that tradition came from. So, too many rituals is not a good idea. A few rituals is okay, once you know their meaning. Did the Buddha have any friends? Yeah, of course. He had so many friends and people who really cared about him. A good example was that one of the kings, King Prasenadi his name was, and just before the king died, he went to see the Buddha, went into the Buddha's hut, and actually started kissing his feet, the Buddha's feet. It's a very dangerous thing to do in India. He's actually, yeah, he died the next day, king. I wonder why. And the Buddha said, what are you doing that for? He said, look, I love you. You've just been such a great friend. And he advised me, now I'm a king, it's a very difficult job, and you've taught me so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And it was like a nice tribute of two good friends who could meet together and discuss all sorts of things. They have many, 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 many friends. But please don't try that to monks like me or any other monks. Stop kissing our feet, because you'll really catch something. The end of wisdom means nothing. Yes or no. What my teacher said was, you are correct but not right. You're right but not correct. So sometimes say yes or no. In between, the end of wisdom means nothing. Means no more thoughts but seeing clearly. So nothing, yeah. Similarly, when I was 18, I went to the United States, really bored, because United States was the same as Europe. So then I went to Central America, because in the jungles had these big pyramids from the Mayan civilization. I went right deep into the jungle and went to one of these old pyramid sites where you could, in those days, 1969, there's no one to stop you, just didn't have to pay any tickets, walk right at the top of one of these pyramids. I never knew what they were there for. But when I got to the top, it was very clear their spiritual religious significance. Because at the top of those pyramids, you are above the tree line of the jungle. For the first time in days, I could see infinity in all directions, with nothing between me and infinity. That's like wisdom. Nothing between you and infinity in all directions. That's seeing clearly. That's wisdom. No dogma, no learning, nothing standing between you and the truth. What would happen if no one ever got married? We would have no more ecological problems in our planet. So, would mean all your school teachers would be out of a job if you didn't have children. People still have children. Yeah. If you never got married, do you know the three rings of marriage? Engagement ring is the first ring. What's the second ring of marriage? Wedding ring.
Yeah.
What's the third ring of marriage?
Suffering.
Suffering, yes. The three rings of marriage. So you know about that one. Can you show us how to meditate? Yeah, easy. Sit down, close your eyes and shut up. Easy. How to support someone who's lost all hopes? You never lose all hopes. You lose most of your hopes. So what to do is you can give them a present. So get a nice box and wrap it up with very nice wrapping paper. Really put a nice little a wish for them, you know, to your friend from me. And inside that little envelope, just write a little note. Hope. H-O-P. So at least they got your little paper. They got some hope. They've got a friend. To me, or to you, from love, with love from me. Little just gestures of kindness. You don't have to give things to people. Just give friendship. Because from friendship comes hope. It's really important. But just give a little word, H-O-P-E, and give it to them. The trouble is that people always look at the future with negativity. That's called worry. Me, I look at the future with a positive mind. That's called hope. So, apparently everyone was going around saying, don't worry, be happy. And I said, no. Don't worry, be hopey. Be hopey, look at the future with hope. Who knows what's going to happen? I listen to your talks every night. My question is, I work in a psychiatric hospital with patients who have lost hope in themselves, even as young as 16. How can I best help them by simple, stable? What can I do? Make them laugh. My first meditation teacher told me this, and I encourage you to do this if you really want to be successful in life. He asked me, I was at university. He said, when you first get up in the morning, what do you do? So I go, toilet. He said, in the toilet, is there a mirror? I said, yeah, of course there's a mirror. And he told me, go in front of that mirror and smile at yourself. And I said, sir, I am a student. I stay up late at night. Sometimes, in those days, he used to drink beer. And said, I would be so frightened of looking myself in the mirror. He said, do it. And he said, when you look in the mirror, smile. Say, impossible. When you first get up in the morning, when your dad first gets up in the morning, does he smile? Very hard, isn't it? Especially you get up in the morning, can you smile? So he said, look in the mirror. If you can't manage a natural smile, take your two fingers. Okay, everyone, two fingers. Side of the mouth. And I tried that for 2 years without fail. I always go to the toilet in the morning when you wake up. 2 years, I looked at myself in the mirror and smiled at myself. And I ended up laughing at myself every day for 2 years. That gave me a very, very big boost of energy and happiness. So I never got depressed, even when my girlfriend dumped me. That way, where you get bottom marks, you can always laugh at yourself. And that's such a funny thing to do, but it's wonderful psychology and psychiatry. To be able to look at yourself in the mirror, don't take yourself so seriously, laugh, instant happiness. And also, all the year 12s, 11s, 10s, whatever, if you're looking for a boyfriend, boys just don't get off when you're not smiling. You smile and you suddenly become attractive. It's much better than makeup, lip gloss, smiling gloss. Same with guys. Girls like to be around happy people, not miserable people. So if you learn how to smile, you become hot. Okay. Am I over time now? Probably am. Yeah. Okay, I hope you found it. You've got some more questions there. Oh, I'll leave you to. You can answer those ones for me because I've got to go now. So, what is the time anyway? Oh, 10 past. How many more questions have you got there? Four. Okay, I can answer those four. And then, but no more questions, please. Very good. Excellent. Oh, are ghosts real? One of the other societies I joined when I was in Cambridge University was the Psychic Research Society, and together with that person I said, Professor Bernard Carr, that's why we became best friends. He was a Buddhist, a theoretical physicist, and also, like me, a ghost hunter. So we went hunting ghosts together. Real ones. Do you want to hear a ghost story?
Yes.
This was, I think if you were there last night at the talk, I told it at the talk last night, this was this Australian girl. She went to England on holiday. And one of the things you do in England if you go on holiday is visit the castles. Because they don't have castles in Australia. Not like, no, 1,000-year-old castles. And so she went on a tour of one of these castles. Now, 1,000 years old, and lots of really bad stuff went on in there. People being killed and tortured in the dungeons. So if anywhere there's going to be a ghost in those castles. And it was such, even though she didn't really believe in ghosts, it was such a spooky experience. Every time she stepped on a floorboard, every time they opened the door, and when they passed the window, the wind would whistle eerily. And she was so scared that by the end of the tour, she was so happy she had survived. And she turned around to the guide and asked, in all honesty, are there any ghosts in this castle? And the guide looked at her in the eye and said, in all the years I've lived in this castle, I've never ever seen a ghost. She felt relieved. But then she asked, how long have you lived in this castle? And he said, over 300 years. Ooh. How to help someone with a gambling problem. Okay, you can tell them the story of the five angels. Because one of my friends had a dream at night time. And the dream was of five angels, devas. And every angel gave this man five big pots of gold. One after another, 25 pots of gold, five times five. And when he woke up in the morning, nothing in the bedroom. No gold, no angels. It's just a dream. But it's one of those dreams which you remember. So he went down for breakfast. He found that morning his wife had made him five pieces of toast and five boiled eggs. What's with this number five? And he looked at the newspaper. It was the 5th of May, the 5th month. And he looked at horse racing. In Perth, we have one of the horse racing tracks named after a famous horse racing field in England, Ascot. A-S-C-O-T. Five letters. So he went to the horse racing track. No, he went to look in the paper. And he couldn't believe his eyes when he saw in race number 5 at Ascot, horse number 5 was called Five Angels. Wow. You only get one of these chances once in your life. So he told his wife, he actually didn't tell his wife anything because he thought he might object. He went to the bank at lunchtime. To keep lucky number 5, he drew 5,000 Australian dollars out of his account. He went to the race course, the fifth bookmaker, the fifth window in line, and he put $5,000 to win, horse number 5, race number 5, Five Angels. The lucky number 5 couldn't be wrong. It wasn't wrong. His horse came in 5th. Tell you that story, stupid gambling. As a Buddhist, is it okay to listen to music? Is this considered a worldly pleasure? I was at a fundraiser, I think for our nuns' monastery, and so they asked me, just to raise funds, they said, we'll give you, it's amazing, it was actually $5,000, they said, to your nuns' monastery, if I would sing a song. Because monks aren't usually allowed to sing songs. But a $5,000 donation? So I thought for a while, I said, okay, I'll do it. And it's for a good cause. So they're all excited. They thought I was going to break my precepts. But they never tried to outsmart a monk. And so I told them, I said, the song I will sing is a very well-known Simon and Garfunkel song. Their first hit. The Sound of Silence. So we got our $5,000 for the monastery, and also I kept my precepts. Next question. Can you explain emptiness in Buddhism? Yes. It's time for my lunch. My stomach is empty. So I'm going to leave now. That's emptiness in Buddhism. Bring it down to real life. When you're hungry, then you can understand emptiness. Oh, I'm so emptiness now. Oh. So that's real emptiness. Okay, thank you again for listening. I hope you enjoyed today with a few funny stories, but some meaningful stories as well. And for your teachers, remember, if you make it entertaining, everyone listens and they remember. So this is called, what's it called? Infotainment. Very good. Okay. So this answer. Okay. You can take this with me in the car. Thank you for all the questions. You want to say a few words? Okay.
No, you have your car ready for
you. Okay. Okay, yeah, you're good.
Thank you to all the vendors here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Sucks to buy, everyone. Talks bye. Very good. Is that better than normal classes?
Very good.
Okie dokie. You want to say something?
Or? No. Okay.